Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2018. Lecture 14, delivered on March 5, 2018. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 1.
Today, Review for Exam 1. Just a basic outline of it. It is four questions. I used to give five, choose four, now it's just four straight up. It is, if you have managed to find old exams on the internet or anything like that, you're probably going to be chasing a ghost. The format is different now because I'm not testing the internet and I'm not testing your groupthink, I'm testing you individually. And if you've been in class, you will be in a much better position for this exam than if you decide to blow off classes a lot because there's a screen, okay, let's begin. First things first, on the basics, I have to check to make sure that it actually went live. There is a grading rubric on the ReggieNet in your resources tab. Like I said, I got to check to make sure that I actually activated it. But that tells you how grading of your written answers will go. You are to use proper English, no abbreviations, don't put things in parentheses. And complete sentences, proper punctuation, and all of that. You would be surprised, well, maybe not, at how many executives just have a cow at me about the writing inability of college students these days. So I am on a one-man mission over the years to fix that. Read that rubric, and you will avoid losing points for spelling and grammar errors. Here's one thing that's really, really don't. If you misspell a word that was in the question spelled correctly, that's. Anyway, be sure that you know that you have plenty of time. You have four questions and 75 minutes. Each question, you can give me no more than two sentences. Don't try to sneak in a third sentence because I'll take off points for it. This is one of the important ideas about your professional life. Here they make you do essays and midterms and all that. When you're in a business environment, if someone asks you, especially if a boss asks you, what's the answer to this question? He doesn't want an essay. He doesn't want a dissertation. He wants you to say, give him an answer and give it clearly. Now, or give her an answer and give it clearly. And so that's why you have two sentences and don't do run-on sentences and all of that. You should be able to answer the basics of the exam in about 20 to 30 minutes. And then you have extraordinarily lots of time to be able to go back and read your answer to see if it actually makes sense and that everything is spelled properly and all of that. If you're done with the exam in 10 minutes, as I have happened quite a bit, that usually means that you're going to lose probably about 10, 15 points just because you wrote, you wanted to get out of here. It was a free day for you after the exam. Take the time. You'll be surprised at how much better you're going to do on the exam if you go back and just read what you wrote and think about it. Okay, does this really make sense? Now, down to the scope of the exam. I'm going to give you a stock screen, like the ones I've done in class. And you are going to do two questions where you interpret the information that you see in that stock screen and put that information and your interpretation into the context of theory and practice. So I might show you a stock screen and ask you a question, all right, what does the market capitalization of this firm mean? Well, that doesn't mean that I want you to tell me, well, market capitalization is number of shares outstanding times the price per share. It's definitely, that's not a right answer for this one. The market capitalization, you would say something to the effect, well, matter of fact, let me put one up here and we'll go through a little bit of this. And again, if you've been in the classroom, you've seen this over and over again, so you will be comfortable with the screens. If you haven't been here, these screens are going to be a mystery to you. Oh, that's really weird. Okay, there we go. But it will be a printout of a screen from this weekend. Getting it too close to the time, I have a hard time getting them printed up, so it'll be a few. And I'll pull up one, just a company right here, a stock screen. Okay, this is Nordstrom. Now, Nordstrom, as you can see, it's having real problems. But if I say, well, what's the market cap? Interpret the market capitalization of this firm. A well-thought-out answer would say the market is assessing that the value of the equity, the market value of the equity of this firm is $8.646 billion. You see, finding the information isn't going to be hard for you at all. If you've been seeing these screens, you'll know right where it is. And you'll also know that I've told you quite a few times, market capitalization is the market's assessment of the market value of the equity of the firm. There's no formula involved in there, and there's no math. You are taking a step beyond numbers, which is at this level, we have these hierarchies of learning in early years of college, we would be giving you multiple choice tests. But by this time, we are doing a higher level of assessment where you are not just filling in bubbles. I do that just for attendance mostly, but you're actually saying, all right, I see this information now. What does this mean? I could ask you about the risk of the stock. And in a case like that, you would tell me what you did assess the risk. And you would tell me what that means in terms of a well-diversified portfolio. Don't ever say, well, this is a risky stock. Almost all stocks are risky. The question is, what is its risk in a well-diversified portfolio? And that's what you could see here. Now, there are two different metrics. If I give you some companies I could give you, you would see that there are the risk from one of those metrics is telling you a different story from the risk from the other metric. Now, usually, and do you remember which, let me try this. Ma'am, do you remember which risk measure is the preferred one that you look at first? Yes. No, don't ask a question. Just say, the beta. You know, show that you, I thought you knew that, Professor, my gosh. Okay, just don't ever ask a question, just say the beta. It is, and if you're wrong, I'll say, boy, that was stupid. No, the beta, yes. And then there was another one that was also a secondary metric of risk. Do you remember which that one was? I didn't talk quite as much about it, but I told some stories about the horror of it sometimes. You remember that one? Anyone remember what it was? Yeah, price-to-earnings ratio. And, of course, in this case, they're both pretty consistent. Remember, see if anyone remembers. Do you remember what I said, kind of like a threshold risk versus risky versus non-risky is with P-E ratio? What I said now, it used to be I would be very uncomfortable with that, but now that's a pretty normal one. Do you remember the number I pushed out? Did you? It was about 30. Back in the day, I'd have a heart attack with a 30. But then after the 1990s, when you saw price-earnings ratios, do you recall the story I told you about one of a Japanese company that a P-E ratio of 200,000? good grief. I mean, now 30 is not anything to worry too much about. Anything under that is probably. But if it's over 30, that might tell me. If I saw that the beta was 0.57 here and the P-E ratio was 56, well, that would tell me, okay, I rely on the beta, but I've got another piece of information here that's telling me something a little different. And so I would be a little more cautious with considering this a safe investment or a relatively, and it's always relatively safe. I mean, the only time you can get completely safe is when you're in your grave. No one can bother you there. Well, the worms do, but that's just a wormy thing. That would be one. Was that a bomb getting ready to go off? I see too many movies. Okay, that's one question that I could ask from a screen. Taking another one, and there what I'm looking for is for you not only to be able to find the numbers that are relevant to the question, but to be able to interpret those numbers. And that, of course, is a higher level of assessment than just giving you op scan sheets and telling you to fill in the bubbles. Another approach I could take would be, okay, I might ask you, okay, here's one. I could say, all right, I could ask you about the company's dividend policy. Okay, you can see that their policy, and this isn't as complicated, this part of the question isn't as complicated as it sounds. The dividend policy is that they pay a dividend. Well, duh. That's their policy. As opposed to a company you might see that doesn't pay a dividend. Now, the next part of that question would key in on what does that mean about what the company's reinvestment policy is. And taking it from there, keep writing here, and taking it from there, what does that mean about potential future growth of the stock price? You see, because whenever you give a dividend, that's money that's not reinvested, and therefore that's money that will not make the company grow. If the company is plowing all of its money back into dividends, plowing all of its money back into the company, well, that means that the company has more money to reinvest and therefore to grow the company and the company's stock price. Show me that you understand that concept. I have a choice every month when I get my paycheck. Do I put it all in an investment account, or do I take some and put it into cheeseburgers to eat?
Depends on how hungry you are.
True, but every cheeseburger I eat means that my company, my investments are not going to grow. And that is what we are looking at here. Show me that you understand that trade-off that companies do. It's wonderful to have a dividend. It's great. At the cost, though, of using that money for future growth of the company and theoretically for future growth of the stock's price. In this case, when you're looking at Nordstrom, they pay a dividend, and it's a fairly generous dividend. It's about 2.75% of the stock price right now. So if you were an investor, you're going to get that, not absolute certainty, but a fairly assured cash flow from dividends. That will be at the cost of getting the riskier possibility of strong growth in the stock price. Okay, show me that you understand concepts like this. And there are several others. I could, for example, ask you, hang on here, make my way over here. I could ask you to talk to me about the day's activity. Or if I gave you a one-year stock price behavior. In the case of Nordstrom, is there anything about this 1 year, this is a 1 year stock chart you're seeing here. Is there anything about that that catches you just as a overall sense, or at least an overall assessment of the company's stock price over the last year? Go. What do you see? Right. There's interestingly, even though it's having Nordstrom has been in some problems, obviously. But do you see those rising tops? That's actually not a bad sign right there. I see some evidence, but I also see substantial price volatility. Do you see that too? This is a really low risk stock. Do you see that in a well diversified portfolio? You hold this stock on its own. You're holding on to a very angry bull. Do you see how this is not on its own a safe stock at all? This thing is whipsawing hard, up and down. You see that? That's a lot of volatility. Let me take another stock that was in the news last week. Delta. And again, this is one last chance for you to see things, and I'll talk about the same things over again. Let's try that again. DAL. That was a little scary. Looking at this one, there is a little bit, interestingly enough, there is a little bit of a mismatch between the two metrics of risk here. See if I can hound someone here a little bit. Ma'am, if you're looking at the primary metric of risk, what would you say about this company's stock, Delta?
It's riskier.
Be more specific.
Its beta is closer to 1.
So you would say that this stock has the risk of the market portfolio. It's almost exactly a market portfolio beta. So in a well-diversified portfolio, this shows evidence of intermediate risk, as you had noted. It's right there in the middle. But if you're looking at the P-E ratio, what does that P-E ratio tell you?
It's not very risky.
Yeah, that's a 10. I mean, that's a surprisingly low for that beta. The beta is telling me it's intermediate risk, but that P-E ratio is sort of indicating a little bit different story. Now, obviously, we want to focus on the beta, but we have that caution that puts a brake on us enthusiastically embracing our assessment of the risk of the company. And again, you have that 1.22. Now, a few days ago, Delta Airlines joined a number of other companies that severed their ties with the National Rifle Association. And as a result, the state of Georgia, which had been planning a massive tax break for Delta to put a hub at the Atlanta airport, pulled that massive tax deal. Well, you had the breathless, boy, this is going to be a real hit to the company. Well, let's look at the 1 month. Doesn't look like there was much of a damage from it at all. Don't believe these breathless. Yeah, that was a tax break they didn't get. But apparently, the market didn't really care too much whether that happened or not anyway. So as far as Delta Airlines' assessment by the market is concerned, so what? Now, going down here, we can again see the market cap. And you should use the same terminology to explain to me what I mean by that. Same terminology to talk about the risk of this security in a well-diversified portfolio. You've got to make sure of that. You might even talk about, I might even ask you about the, be careful when I ask you about return. I will use the term word return, but when you come back at me, you clarify that the only thing you can talk about, that is future related is expected return. Don't ever, if you're talking about something that has not happened yet, don't use the word return without the word expected in front of it. That is, it's almost, well, obviously it's expected. No, you want to make sure that no one bites you in the butt for saying return when what you meant, and they should have understood, was this is an expectation, not a prediction. And so always avoid leaving that expected off. You'll lose points if you don't use expected in your answer. And then, of course, you can also talk about the volume on this security and make sure that you mention that we are talking about OBV clearly. And it appears that, well, ma'am, for this day, tell me about the relative volume of trades in this security. Come on. Look at the volume and look at the average volume. Talk to me. So what does that mean? Interpret it. Say it again. Than the average. Yes. You see, that wasn't as easy as you thought it was. I hit you and you didn't know what to say. So thank God we're talking about what to say. This is where I am sharpening you so that you come out of here with a much clearer way to answer questions.
So what would you say?
Well, tell me. Tell me. What do you see here on the volume for the average volume? Tell me.
Okay. Okay.
8.5 million. Mm-hmm. So what was the volume today?
It's
almost 6. So tell me, relative to average volume, was this a heavy trading day or a light trading day? Bingo. Yeah. And you put that in a complete sentence and impress me. You're not ready to be a stock analyst yet, but that's what this is all about. Yeah. Okay. Okay. If a light isn't off, it is. Okay. Now, I was walking along the curb with my hands like this, and I fell off. I lost my... Okay. Yes. You knew it, didn't you? See, I didn't even have to tell you. Yeah. Remember, I talked about the dark markets, that there is a lot of trading that happens that is off the limit order books. And that, so you have to watch it anymore, we can't really say in an absolute sense, okay, there were 5.9 million shares traded today, because this does not measure what is not reported, that stuff that is not in the broker-dealer's books, in their limit order books. So that's that dark market activity. And there could be a lot of activity there. We just don't know about it. On average, there could be a lot of activity there that we just don't know about.
On balance?
Yeah, on balance volume. On balance volume. We're talking about volume. This is volume. But the volume that is reported is on balance, OBV. That means that it is listed in the limit order books of the broker-dealers. That's how we count the number of shares traded. It's from these limit order books. They're not actually books anymore. They're electronic ledgers. But that's where we count. But what is happening in the dark markets is not on balance. It's not on the balance sheet. It's not on the record the way these shares that are reported here are. So that's off balance, but we don't know what that is. We just don't know what that is. That activity, and remember I told you that activity can sometimes, it's sitting under there under the surface, and all of a sudden it can just reach up and show that, good God, there was all this volume and suddenly the price drops, sinks like that. Well, that's those invisible things down there suddenly bubbling up to the surface with consequences of the trades that were happening that we didn't know about. So you really need to keep that in mind. But that's a little bit deeper than what I would be asking on this test. That's talking about things like dark markets and all that. I'll talk a lot more about those. And I'll bring up more about cryptocurrencies and blockchains so that you know what the future is going to be like for you. And here's a hint. It's going to not be that pretty. Okay. Now, those are two questions. Just from the screen of a stock that is printed out, and you just read it and answer two different questions. Respond meaningfully. Make sure that you cover everything. Don't say return. Say expected return. Don't give me a formula. I don't want a formula. Don't do math for me. I don't want math on this exam. You do too much math, if you ask me. And so this is your chance to show me that you understand what I'm understand on a higher cognitive level what's going on. Now, third question. I might give you a screen something like this one. Not necessarily. It won't be this one, but it'll be one similar to this from another site. And I'm going to tell you, find the bond issue or issues of one of the companies in the screen. And I'm going to ask you first to characterize the instrument. Here's what I mean. You tell me the term of the bond. You tell me its coupon. That's characterizing. Now, I could throw one. I made sure I got a screen that didn't have any callables or convertibles because you might not see the little C down there that would warn you about that. What's the trading symbol, that kind of stuff. See the trading symbols here. And then I'm going to say, all right, and you'll also characterize it in terms of whether it is. What do you remember, ma'am, what the term is for a bond that is high quality? What do we call it? Does anyone remember the name I gave for you? Yeah. Investment grade. Part of the characterization is whether it's investment grade, or do you recall what we call a bond that is not investment grade? Say it. No. I suppose I asked for that one. Knock it off. The dirty term, don't use the term, but it's we would call them junk bonds. But don't call it a junk bond. We have another term we would use. Yeah.
High yield.
And we classify the junk
bonds. None of those are junk. In that screen, I mean, this is the New York Times, for God's sake. They're not going to put up junk. they come from the good side of New York City. But you would know it, first of all, by the big screamer would be the ratings. I mean, if you remember the breakoff, anything that has a C in it, that's bad news. That's the high yield. And in this case, you're not going to see any high yields. But you will also want to, in some way, in that question, I will be asking you to explain why the price is at a premium or at a discount to par. Okay? And that is a very short answer. It is very easy to answer that if you understand how bond prices are related to something else. So, to begin this, and I've got to stand up here even though it's going to hurt. CVS is selling at 102, the quote is 102,323. CVS. You see it? It's the top one. Sir, why is its what is it selling at a premium or a discount to par?
It'd be a premium.
It's selling at a premium to par. Now tell me why it's selling at a premium to par. It's right there.
Coupon's greater than the yield.
I love it when you talk like that. My God. Dinner tonight. I don't buy. I told you, I just stand outside of Red Robin and look in the window saying, that's right, people eat them cheeseburgers. Eat them all. Anyway. Okay. You understand that? Okay. So when I'm asking you about this, it sells at a premium or a discount based upon the relationship between the coupon and the yield. Show me that you understand that relationship. If the market thinks that the coupon is better than it should be, it'll sell at a premium. If the market thinks that the coupon isn't good enough, it will sell at a discount to par. Show me that you understand that in a clear, concise sentence. The shorter the time that I have to read what you write, the happier I am. And you want me to be happy when I'm grading, right? And if you have followed my Twitter account, you will see, I actually, by the way, live stream at some points, and I put up pictures of the cats and me grading and all of that. So at, from time to time, you'll see, it's on the hashtag PROFC, ProfC, you'll see, all right, I'll say, all right, Phineas was very upset with those answers that you were giving, and I'll show a picture of Phineas with his ass at the screen or something. Now, the relationship, I would want you to say, this bond is selling at a premium to par because the yield is less than the coupon. That's all you have to say to show me that you understand this concept, this rock-solid mathematical relationship between prices and yields. It's not just about bonds. Yields on everything are related inversely to their prices. So when interest rates are going up, which they are now, it should not surprise us that that is going to cause prices of securities as a general rule to fall. And so as the Fed is putting the screws on the economy, pushing up interest rates at the short end, well, not surprising that that's going to cause stock prices, bond prices, and a lot of other things to slide backwards. But now, let me do one thing here. I'm going to grab another screen here. I thought I had Wall Street Journal showed up very early on this. Okay. Let me see if I can find something from FINRA. Well, that's just FINRA trying to be educational. I just wish it would, Pete, please. Oh, there's their morning star. Let me see if they give you. Nope, that's just treasuries. Seriously? I was hoping I'd find something from, well, they're going to try to lock me in the site. Okay, bear with me 1 minute here. Ah, there we go. Oh, that helped me a lot. Okay. I was hoping I'd show you another one that's pretty good. Oh. Nope. But it will be like that one that you just saw. And in fact, the one that I will be showing you is a Morningstar screen. And what I did was, for the presentation on the exam, I took out a couple of columns that have to do with the high and low trading prices for the day on the bonds, just to unclutter it a little bit. And the one I gave you, I'm providing you, does only two of the three rating services. I think it does Moody's and Standard & Poor's, or Standard & Poor's and Moody's, but it doesn't do Fitch. That kind of reduces the confusion that you might have about bond ratings to try to clean it up. Okay? That is the first part of the exam, three of the four questions. Now, the fourth question, is sort of a free-for-all. Well, actually, I guess I could just put the exam up on the overhead.
Yeah.
Actually, once I didn't realize it was up there. I had it muted, and the mute came off. Man, people were writing like animals. And I thought, yeah, this is how I want to see it. And then no, these people are too damn dedicated. Okay. One question, and again, two sentences. Don't go five times around the barn to get to the outhouse. Don't make it too simple, but you should be able to get an answer in a fairly short amount of space. So what is the relationship between risk and return? I could ask that. I'm going to give you about seven or eight here. Now remember, I'm leading you along to make a mistake. When I say return, what do you put in front of return when you answer me back? Expected, yes. Yeah, watch that. I can be an asshole sometimes. Okay, let's try this one. Who has the residual claim and who has the prior claim on the cash flows of a corporation? Who has the residual claim and who has the prior claim on the cash flows of a corporation? Oh, no, you don't. You can answer that. And don't come. Oh, by the way, I do have extended office hours tomorrow and Wednesday. Noon to 3 tomorrow, I'll be in. And then noon until this class time. Is it noon until the class time? Or maybe it's 1 until class time on Wednesday. So if you have last minute questions. And don't come in and ask me to pre-grade an answer for you. I'll eat your head off for that. Yeah.
Okay, so if I ask
you guys, you've got your notes about that. Your notes talk to you, don't they? Yeah. And although studying together is definitely advised, don't go too far with it, because almost invariably, the loudest, most certain voice is going to be the idiot. And the ones who really know their material aren't going to be sharing it with you. They're smart. They're going to be your bosses someday. I won't say they'll be the president, because that's not a qualification, but be cautious about having someone who thinks he knows the answers, and watch out for everyone saying the same thing to you. That is how, over history, we have slaughtered. We drive the buffalo, the Native Americans drove the buffalo into crazed herds heading over cliffs. We now create chat bots that make everyone think that everyone's believing the same thing. Don't fall for it. Think for yourselves. Read your notes. Okay, now. Explain liquidity. And it's and relationship. Explain liquidity and the relationship between the liquidity of an investment and its expected return. Again, explain liquidity and the relationship between the liquidity of an investment and its expected return. What does flight to quality mean? Give an example. What does flight to quality mean? Give an example. Huh? There's no such thing as flight to quantity. Okay, wrong. I go to this Chinese all-you-can-eat buffet. And I mean, I drive there so fast, I'm fly. And then after a while, the owner comes out and says, you eat too much, you go. And that's flight to quantity, okay?
We didn't talk about quality.
Yeah, we did. We talked about flight to quality. We most certainly did several times. From stock to, and then... It starts off from stock to, and then you go from there. I thought you said we didn't talk about that. Okay, what does a beta of a stock measure? What does a beta of a stock measure?
Can we answer?
No. No, this isn't the test. And if you know the answer, why would you share it with other people? No. You could do that other places, but that's part of the game here. When I used to teach economics, there was a game that we called You Lose Sucker. In order to proceed in the game, you had to make coalitions with other players. But in order to win the game, you had to commit treachery on those who trusted you. Welcome to capitalism. Okay, I'm going to give you two more here. I don't want to give you too much overall. I can't ask you that. Okay, I will. Okay. What is money? And what are the... four types listed by liquidity. Again, what is money and what are the four types listed in order of liquidity? I used to ask what are the three types, and I finally, this will be the first semester if I ask it, I would be asking you for the four types because it's now real. And just one more. I don't want to overwhelm you with things. Okay. Distinguish between primary and secondary markets and between money and capital markets. Distinguish between primary and secondary markets and money and capital markets. Between primary and secondary and money and capital markets. Now when you do, yes. Say that again. There's no study guide. Life isn't going to give you a study guide, and neither do I. Consider me life. It ends, as I will someday. Now, again,
Just stay frosty. Come in, do the exam. You're going to have plenty of time to review it. Don't lose points just because you don't spell or you don't punctuate or you use an abbreviation. Don't do that. And I'll be in my office if you want to come in. I won't pre-grade an answer for you, but I can give you insights if you need some more help, especially if you want to look at some screens some more. Now, you ask me questions. Yes. Yes. 4x6 note card. And don't ask me front and back. I'm not going to go around and see if you've got it on one side. You know, it was a couple of years ago, some moron, he had crib notes on his arm. If you had come to class, you would have known. Why? I hope you get, you know, ballpoint pen poisoning. Anyway, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, note card. Yeah. Huh? Well, it has to be with your hand, but most of you can't write in cursive. No, for God's sake. No, you write. Unless you have a permanent or temporary disability, then you can use a computer over in the disability concerns. But if it's just in the classroom, you write. And most of you, when I say write, that means you print because you didn't learn it. Oh, that, you know what will happen? Oh, you can print that up. I have some students who are geniuses. They make all these notes on an 8x10 piece of paper, and then they photo reduce it down. And then they can't read it, but, oh, if you, yeah, you can type it if you want. I mean, that, I didn't understand. Yeah, I even had a student ask me if I could help him read what he had written. Bruh, no. Okay, yeah.
It sounds like it doesn't have like a lot of calculations
in it. It has none.
So if it doesn't, why is the homework test and quizzes and stuff online?
Because I have two things to assess you: your quantitative abilities and your reasoning skills. I can test you on math. A robot can. And we have to, because we're not going to send you out there unable to do math. But I'm not going to send you out there with your without the ability to explain yourself. Yes. Yeah, go ahead. No, I would not go that far. I would not go that far. You would say that this is expected to appreciate over the current year. But to be honest with you, I wouldn't go even with that question. But it would be worth it for you to be able to note it for your own purposes. That, oh yeah, it's expected to appreciate in price over the next. Did you notice Nordstrom's, by the way? It's expected to rocket in price. Is that going to happen? I don't think so. So that's why I probably wouldn't ask you about that. That projection was probably done by someone's cat. My cat probably did. He's very good at projecting. Phineas. Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, you would, because Bitcoin is, Bitcoin is an important crypto, but it is, that's like saying an American $1 bill is the fiat money. No, there are many fiat monies all over the world. Does anyone know any of the other cryptos?
Litecoin.
Good. What else?
Ripple.
And any others?
Ethereum.
Which, of course, Ethereum is taking over the blockchain, so... there's another one, too. I just saw. I blindsided. Does anyone know another one? I ran into one I was reading an article, and they were mentioning it. Anyway, okay, other questions you have? Dream on. You already tried that. It's like I said, I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
So a couple questions ago, you said, what does a blank equality mean? Give me an example. What was that word?
Flight. Yeah, flight. You know, like, no, you know what? When I was learning how to fly, the engine started acting up, and the instructor told me, don't worry, we will make it to the crash site. Words to the wise. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.